is hour number two of Midday with Trey and BK, live from Big 12 Media Days in Frisco. We're at the Star here. It's like Junior Jerry World, if you will. This place is really nice, and it's a pleasure to be here today. Thanks to a number of sponsors, including Reliable Automotive, more specific to the Midday Show. Thank you to Audio Visual Consultations, also Lone Oak Motors. We will tell you more about both those companies here in just a few minutes. But right now, we're pleased to be joined by a couple of Texas Longhorns who made the trip with Tom Herman this year. Patrick Vahe, offensive lineman, also Chris Nelson, defensive lineman. Guys, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
We're doing great. Thank y'all.
Absolutely. And Patrick, go ahead and pull up to the microphone a little bit. There you go. Patrick, I wanted to start with you because there has been so much made of this offensive line over the last couple of years and how that is the key to success for the entire offense, especially in 2018. Mm-hmm. You've had a new coach come in this offseason, Herb Hand. You've also had a graduate transfer come in, and Calvin Anderson. You play next to Calvin Anderson, of course, during the season, of course, assuming both you guys win those jobs on the left side of the line. How confident are you that the offensive line is going to surprise people with how they play in 2018?
Really, to be honest, I think to lead up to that day, we're going to have to take each day one by one. And I think it will help out a lot with Coach McKnight training us in the offseason. And when we get to fall camp, we're going to have Coach Hand coach us the way that he always does and give us that confidence that we really need to go into the season. So I'm really excited for, like, what's at stake when it comes to these guys, because, like, they have a lot to prove, as well as me. But at the same time, that's a challenge that we're willing to take.
How about you, Chris? You go up against these guys in spring practice, of course, once fall practice is going. You're stepping into a much larger role this year, helping to replace Puna Ford on the defensive line. Yeah. The defensive line has been one of the strengths of this team these last few years. Are you pretty comfortable with stepping into what the shoes that Puna was filling over these last few years?
Oh, yeah, I'm confident, man. That's my brother. So we talk to each other every night pretty much. But, yeah, I'm real confident on taking on the weight of the front line. Yes, sir.
Now, you guys on the defensive line, Chris, a lot of experience. You'll be flanked by Brecken Hager, who, of course, is up here, and then Charles and Minnie, who as well. All of you guys have been on campus for a long time.
Yeah.
What kind of year do you guys expect to have in 2018?
That's the great thing about it, because we've been in the game for a long time, so we're very confident in each other, and we know how each other plays. So we right now we just focus on one game at a time. I can't see how the year is going to look, but I feel positive in our D-line.
Now, I want to ask both of y'all. Chris, we'll start with you on this one. We just heard Tom Herman say that you guys are as close of a team as Texas has had in a long time. You know, why is that the case? Why are you guys such a close-knit group this year?
I would say the thing is with us this year is we're spending more time outside of football. And that's the thing about it. When we come in the locker room, everybody's excited to work. Everybody's excited to go out there on the field and get better each day. Yes, sir.
Patrick, what about you? Why do you feel that you guys are such a close-knit unit this year?
I agree with Chris Nelson when it comes to spending a lot of time off the field. I think there is, like, the coaches gave us so much confidence that we're able to turn this program into coach-fed and player-led. Yeah. And so that's the reason why the relationship's so strong, because it's one thing to hear it from a coach, but it's another thing to hear it coming from a player.
Yeah.
And so, like, like, for me, with the offensive line unit, and really anybody, like, we like to spend a lot of time together. And really there, that bond just grows, and, like, it just keeps growing and growing, and it'll affect everybody. And so I think that's why he's saying that, and that's why it's important for us on the team.
Is hanging out away from the field pretty specific to position groups? Because that's who you're spending so much time with when you're actually in the weight room and also on the practice field as well. And also, what are some of the things that you guys do together away from the field to increase that bond, starting with you, Patrick?
Really, to be honest, it just depends. Everybody mingles with everybody.
Okay.
But when it comes to, like, offensive line unit, we like to barbecue. Mm-hmm. So we like to cook steaks. We like to cook a lot of things. When it comes to grilling, though, there's, like, two main grillers, and it's Shackelford and Rodriguez. And they're the main guys that really cook for us. And other than that, usually with everybody, we like to go floating. We like to just hang out. You know, it just depends on, like, what we feel like. So
you guys don't go down to the Guadalupe and just float on the river?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's
so much
fun.
Yeah, that's the best way ever.
How about you, Chris? Who are some of your closer friends on the team, and what are some of the things that you guys like to do away from the field?
My closer guys, like he said, we pretty much hang out with everybody on the team. That's the thing. That's what we're saying. Like, the team has bonded so much better because it's not just a unit hanging out. It's like anybody you call, everybody coming over, and pretty much everyone comes to my house. Like, we grill, we go to a water park, we just just hang out, watch movies, or play the game. It's any kind of bonding you need, you know, that just know your brother more than, you know, to be on the field.
Y'all go to water parks together?
Yeah.
What are we talking? Which water parks are we talking? I mean, you guys have to get some looks for people when you walk in. There's a bunch of little kids. You guys show up, huh?
Yeah. Recently, I went to Slitherbomb. Okay. I think that's what it's called.
Yep. Then, solid one.
Then we went to Six Flags. We did the roller coaster, and then we went to the water park.
Oh, nice.
There you go.
That's good stuff right there. Huh? Yeah. Any Fortnite going on? You guys been Fortnite players?
That's my side of the
story. Yeah.
Are you?
I'm always playing with everybody on the team because everybody be inviting me, and I'll just be playing with them. So really, it's just a lot of squad playing. So.
Who's the best player on the team?
Me.
You are? No questions asked. If I ask everybody else, they'll say you also.
Okay. Huh? Well, we got some top players. I mean, you got Bergen, that's pretty good.
Go.
Sam Ellinger is pretty good. We got a tight end named Max Cumming. He's pretty good. The Duvernay brothers are really good.
Yeah.
You just got me. I teach them everything that they need to know about the games.
Now, you guys are here in Dallas because Coach Herman considers you to be leaders within the team, within your position groups. I want to ask each of you what it means to be a leader, and we'll start with you, Chris.
A leader is just not leading on the field. You don't always have to be vocal, but, you know, from us, a standpoint, we've been here for a long time, so we've been vocal leaders. You know, when somebody's down, you pick them up. When somebody's up high, you still pick them up. You tell a guy what he's doing wrong, you tell him what he's doing right. It's a lot of things that come with being a leader. So we just take it, and it's an honor, and we're blessed to be leaders at the end of the day. Yes, sir.
How about you, Patrick? What does it mean to be a leader?
I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be able to represent the team, the campus. Really, it's just the greatest honor to know that I'm doing something for my brothers. Because that's pretty much what I do every day. I wake up in the morning, just think of them. Because if I was to do something wrong, it'll affect everybody on the team, and that's the last thing I ever want to do. So really, it's a like Chris Noah said, it's a very blissful feeling right there.
You know, Coach Herman up there on stage a few minutes ago said he's preached sort of a two-part system for your offseason for you guys. It's develop and finish. We heard it from Coach Herman, but I want to hear it from both of you. Patrick, we'll start with you. What does that mean, the develop and finish? What are you guys preaching this offseason to improve record-wise in 2018?
Okay, when it comes to developing and finishing, in my opinion, I think it's like everything that you need to work on, the offseason is the best time to do it. That's when the developing part comes into play. I got a lot of things that I got to work on myself, and being able to do it in the off season with Coach McKnight, especially with the team around me, you know, I'm able to do it more confidently than ever. But when it comes to the finishing part, it just comes down, it's self-explanatory. Finish everything that you're doing. Go one play at a time, 1-0. And so like, that's really the mindset that we have. And leading into the season, we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm.
Guys, just a couple more questions for you. Thank you again for the time today. What are realistic expectations for Texas Longhorn football in 2018? What will define a successful season for both of you? And we'll start with you, Patrick.
Being able to say that we can go 1-0 every time.
Yeah.
Because if we ever have any doubts or anything like that, we have to go back to our fundamentals and what we've basically been preaching all offseason, all season, and so on. And that's pretty much the developing and the finishing part and going 1-0. That's pretty much the mindset all the time.
Chris?
Like you said, 1-0 mentality, looking back at the game, knowing we played great and we worked our butt off.
Is Big 12 championship game realistic?
You don't have to wait and see.
Yeah.
All right. So you guys talk about 1-0, and that was preached before last season as well. You know, hate to bring up a bad memory, but the first game was not a great one for y'all against Maryland last year.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys, I guess, how do y'all prevent something like that from happening again this year? And are you using that game against Maryland as motivation for revenge? Mm-hmm. Or are you just completely putting that behind you and saying, look, it's a new year, let's just go 1-0 this year? Chris, we'll go with you first.
Yeah, we are pretty much putting that game behind us. It's a new year, and starts with the team chemistry, and that's what we started with day one. We're trying to build team chemistry as high as we can, so when we get on the field, we can communicate and fly around. So that game is in the past right now. We're trying to look forward.
Yes, sir. Patrick, what about you, man?
I agree with him. It's a game in the past. To be a great team, you got to move on and learn from your mistakes. And so being able to learn from that game last year, we're able to use that as a stepping stone. And for the season to come, we're able to use that as a 1-0 mentality thing. So just going one game at a time, and Maryland's the first one. So got to take that game first.
You guys are looking good. You're looking big. Yancey's got you working this offseason.
Yeah, he's work. Oh, yeah.
How do you think Trey and I would do in one of Yancey McKnight's offseason workouts?
I think y'all
like
should come
through.
Here? come through for a session.
You'll have to be taking a lot of weights off the off the bar.
Yeah. It really hurts.
What about the hair? Was this, you and Brecken Hager, look, we're trying to figure out who the best team in the conference is, but the best hair in the conference, at least right here, is Texas. What's going on with the hair, man? You're letting it grow for a while,
Oh, man, you know how it goes. You know, I got to leave it down, let the hair game flow, you know. Yeah. I don't know. I give a lot of props to my buddy Brecken. You know, his flow game is that's beyond everything.
What do you think is better than yours? He doesn't have better hair than you. Come on, man.
I don't know. I think Brecken, in my opinion, has the better hair on the team. So, I mean, it is what it is.
Chris, what about you, man? Where's your flow? Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't want to get in between. They both got good hair. Yeah.
Is that any added motivation, guys? Brecken says he's not going to cut his hair until a Big 12 championship is won. I mean, don't you want to, for added motivation, want to win the Big 12 championship just to see this dude have to cut those beautiful locks?
That's one of them. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, we're ready to see it. Yep.
I love it. Well, guys, we appreciate the time, man. Yeah. I know you got a ton of places to go, and we're looking forward to this season. We're excited for y'all going up on your senior years. It should be fun, and thanks for joining us today for a little
thank
bit.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank y'all. Appreciate it.
Chris Nelson, Patrick Vahe, nice enough to spend
thank
a few
Chris.
Minutes with
thank
us.
You.
A couple of guys expected to be huge contributors for the Texas Longhorns in 2018, and they are leaders. I really like their answer to that question that you asked, Trey, about what it means to be a leader. They're representing, of course, the football program, but also the University of Texas as well, and it's a big deal. For your head football coach to choose you, to entrust you, it's a media circus. You're talking to a bunch of people that you're never going to see again. You're dressed up nice.
Yeah.
You got to make sure you don't say anything too over the top. This is a big deal, a big honor, and you can tell Chris and Patrick were very appreciative and very happy to be here representing UT.
They are, and you know, the reason why these guys have been brought to Dallas this year by Tom Herman and this coaching staff and this media staff is that these guys are incredibly important for their specific position groups. You heard Tom Herman talking about Chris Nelson stepping into Puna Ford's shoes. Look, he's not going to replace Chris Puna Ford on his own, but he can go a long ways in helping, especially on first and second downs. I've seen Chris Nelson do some really good things for this team over the last couple years now, and he's going to have a majority role on that defensive line. And Patrick Vahe, considering what's going on around him now, his performance, I think, is going to help dictate what the rest of this Texas offensive line does throughout the season.
And he knows that, and you heard him say that. And he mentioned he's got a lot of things that he needs to get better in individually, and he talked about not letting the team down, that being important.
Yeah.
That's what you want from your leaders. You play for your brothers. They use that term brothers a lot. This is a collective unit. It's a full team effort for Texas to get back on track. We saw some great signs last year, the game against Missouri, the Texas Bowl, a great final taste in the mouth of some of these Texas players and fans. That's got to translate to year two of the Tom Herman era. There's a lot of experience on this team, especially at key positions. For the first time in a long time, we talk about the quarterback room a lot, but if you really go up and down this roster, just about at every unit you have experience in terms of years and in terms of playing time as well. Hopefully that will translate for this Texas team, Trey. And I love the mantra that Tom Herman was preaching up there. Develop and finish. Finishing was a huge problem. We talk about it all the time. Texas was three or four plays away from being a 10-win football team last year. The game at USC, the game against Oklahoma State, they were on a final drive against Oklahoma where one or two things happens. Texas wins that game.
Texas Tech
as well. Plenty of opportunities the Longhorns had. Now they've got to finish, and I love that that's a mindset that's created in practice. Like, you can't actually replicate 3 minutes to go, and you're down by 3 points trying to drive for the winning touchdown. You can't actually replicate that in practice, but if you play with that mindset, if you sort of create those scenarios in a practice, in a scrimmage like feel, then that's only going to be successful, and it hopefully will translate to actual Saturdays in the fall.
Very well said, BK. And I think Patrick Vahe specifically is going to benefit from a renewed emphasis on Texas making sure to establish the ground game as well. He's always been a decent run blocker. It's been in the passing game where he's had his struggles. I think the fact that he really gets to help set the tone with the running attack first is going to help him going the other way in terms of protecting the pass whenever it's Ellinger or Bouchel who is dropping back for a throw.
God, how much food do you think they're cooking at those barbecues, man? I mean, I got the occasional barbecue with like four or five of my buddies, but we're not offensive line. We're all scrawny white Jewish journalists, man. I mean, that's we don't eat like those guys do. You know, there's a lot of food going on at those barbecues.
I almost mentioned this, but then the conversation just moved on. Just watching what Charles Omenihu eats for his internship during the afternoon show.
Oh, what does he eat? I don't think I've heard this before.
He comes in with a full meal at 3 o'clock, and he usually between putting up the podcast at like 5 and 6, he goes and gets another full meal because he has to eat that much because he's got to keep that weight on and also all the calories that are being burned through Yancey McKnight's strength and conditioning program.
You know,
too.
I tried that bit one time. I was trying to put on some mass.
Oh, really?
If you will. Yeah, this was a couple of years ago.
Pre-BK 30.
This was part of BK Play 30. Okay. This was when a BK Play 60 was a thing.
Okay.
I had to dwindle. You know, lower your goals, lower your expectations. You got to be more realistic.
Next year it's going to be BK Play 10.
But this was 10 seconds. But this year, this was before we had this show. So my day at the Horn ended at 11 o'clock, so I had a little bit more time.
Yeah.
I would take the trade-off any day to have the show, but I had a little bit more time to do things, and I wasn't as tired leaving work every day. So I was actually a member of Planet Fitness. I was a member of a gym, and I would go 3 or 4 times a week to lift. I wouldn't skip leg day for those who were curious out there. It's important. Make sure to remember leg day. But I would go, but I would also – I went to GNC. And I tried to, and I talked to the so-called expert there. Who knows if those guys are actually experts or just have a better resume than anybody else who applies for a job there.
Some people just interview
but
well.
But I got this, triple X mass gainer. So I had the protein, the post-workout protein, which you take, and then I had this mass gaining stuff as well. And if you made a shake with this mass gain, it was like 1,100, I think it was like 1,500 calories just in this shake alone.
Man.
And I'd put bananas, I'd put peanut butter, I would put stuff in there to add even more calories to the shake. Now, the guy's like, man, if you really want to put on weight, you got to eat like 4,000 calories a day, 5,000 calories a day at least. And I was like, dang, well, I eat a lot of fast food, so maybe I'm getting close to that as it is. So I started to try this shake thing as a supplement to me eating. And, dude, once I had this shake for the day, I couldn't eat anything else. I couldn't eat anything. I would, eat it after lunch.
It just sticks in
your
stomach.
And it would just stick there. I couldn't eat dinner. I couldn't eat anything. I don't know how people would drink those and continue to eat. But that's what you have to do if you're a big-time athlete. You got to take the supplements. You got to eat pretty much 24/7,
no doubt.
Especially if you're on the defensive line like Charles Omenihu.
And the right kind of lifting and the right kind of working out as well. And that's where Yancey McKnight really comes into play. You heard it talked about ad nauseum last offseason where he was doing more to increase the strength of these guys' cores and then also their bases as well, their leg strength. There were certain very obvious activities that weren't happening within Charlie Strong's conditioning program that they changed really quickly, and I think you're starting to see those benefits now. You saw them a little bit last year. It's going to be even more so here in 2018.
These dudes look big. These dudes look strong, and as I learned from P19X, the core strength is very, very important.
P19X.
Yeah, I couldn't get the full 90 days. 19 was good enough for me. That's all I could get in me. All right, we're taking a break. Justin Wells of Inside Texas will join us next. He's sitting at the table. We'll get Jay Wells' thoughts on what Tom Herman had to say as he addressed the media here at Big 12 Media Days in Frisco. We are live. Thanks again to AV Consultations and Lone Oak Motors for getting us up here. We appreciate their continued support of the Midday Show. We'll be right back. Justin Wells of Inside Texas next. Midday with Trey and BK. This is The Horn.
That's why we love Wags right there.
Yes, sir.
Even though it's not officially Wednesday for our Wednesday conversation with Justin Wells, he is still playing the Jay Wells walk-up music. There is an extra guest, though, on today's version of that. Back here on the Midday Show, live from Big 12 Media Days here in Frisco. We're at the Star. Let's see, we're at the 20-yard line, and things are really nice all around us. I can't believe they play high school football games. Matt Rhule is up on stage right now.
Yeah, how about I'll credit Joe Cook of Inside Texas for this joke, but Matt Rhule wearing the Masters jacket. He's got the green blazer going on right now. He looks like Sergio, just wearing it everywhere that he goes.
Nicely done by Joe Cook there, and we're pleased to be joined now by a couple dudes from Inside Texas. Of course, Justin Wells, who I just mentioned, but also Ian Boyd, first time on the Midday Show. Guys, thank you so much for the time. Ian, we'll start with you first. How are things going today?
It's pretty nice. I came all the way from Michigan, so the weather here is not so great, but it's really nice in this facility. I've never been here before.
You came here from Michigan. Is Michigan where you live?
Yeah.
Oh, really? I never realized that before. Huh.
You would never know from the internet age where people are are blogging from.
It pretty much seems like you're on the sidelines each and every practice, each and every game as well, and I guess that's a testament to the job that you do. Let's start with the offensive line, Ian. We just had Patrick Vahe on the show. He seems pretty confident that this is going to be a better group in 2018. Texas fans need it to be for the offense to take a step forward. How confident are you in this offensive line being better than they have been the last couple of years, and why?
I think for a unit in the Big 12 and in football in general, the saying that you're only as strong as your weakest link is a very, very holds very true. Texas had two weak links often last year, sometimes three. You could, with, you know, McMillan playing with a club on his hand, and you know, everybody had to play whether they were, you know, 100% or not. This year they have that Calvin Anderson from Rice stepping in at left tackle. If he's even average, that's a boost to this offensive line. You have your left guard, your center, and your right tackle all getting 1 year better with McKnight, and now with Herb Hand guiding the show. And then right guard was a huge issue last year between McMillan in and out with injury, and then Cooney doing the best he could.
That's a good way to put it.
Now they get Rodriguez back. So just from having a unit that is going to probably be able to put five average players or better on the field at all times, it makes an enormous difference.
Well, I'll ask Justin, I'll go to you here with this one, sort of a follow-up. Offensive line injuries are inevitable, right? It just happens. I get really annoyed when people say, well, if they have one injury on the offensive line, they're in trouble. Well, that's going to happen, so that means they're in trouble. We saw that last year. Connor Williams, the All-American candidate, goes down, and the Texas offensive line struggles pretty much all year long. Do you think this group, with some incoming freshmen, with, as Ian mentioned, Calvin Anderson coming into the fold, Mikey Grandy, the JUCO transfer, do you think this group can sustain an injury or two and still be serviceable up front?
Absolutely. Whenever you have depth, and that's the main thing when you talk about the offensive and defensive lines, it's depth. And that really starts as freshmen, because ideally those are the two main positions, both those lines of the scrimmage, where you want to redshirt. They need to develop. They need to grow and to learn the systems. Last year, and actually the last few years, Texas has had to kind of makeshift their offensive lines. When Charlie was there, and of course, in Tom's first year, and when Connor went down, it was almost like cutting the head off the snake. That was their left tackle, their blind side, their main thing. And so the depth is a lot better this year, simply because the guys that Herman brought in last year, your Derek Kerstetters, Sam Cosmes, and then the guys that they signed, the junior Engelau, the Mikey Grandy, like you said, the JUCO, and then Calvin Anderson. I mean, what a blessing that guy could be if he tackles that left tackle spot. And so the depth is so much better now than I can see in the last 6 or 7 years. Maybe Max last year was the last time that looked like there was a little bit of depth. And so the more depth you have there, Herb Hand is a very big proponent of cross training guys, and that's where the injuries would help. Like if somebody goes down, Herb Hand is doing a lot of that this spring with cross training. You know, trying Kerstetter at right tackle, also left guard, and at center. You know, trying different guys in different spots. And so as long as those guys are cross trained and there's more depth, and you're building and you're redshirting those guys, it'll only get better. And I think Herb Hand is the best technician for this group. Like it's the perfect match. Herman found the right guy, because if you don't protect Sam Ehlinger and Shane Bouchel, we may have a relapse of last year, and I think that's going to be the difference this year, at least for the offense.
Talking Longhorn football with a couple of Inside Texas guys, Justin Wells, Ian Boyd as well. Ian, I wanted to ask you about the running back position. It seems like it's going to be a by-committee approach. Tom Herman pretty much said as much on stage. What does each guy do well enough, and what is that role going to be for each of the main running backs on this team right now, game one of the 2018 season?
Well, the heart of the offense is inside zone play, where the back is going play side A gap to cut back.
So, and A gap is, for people that don't know,
just off the center.
Okay.
So it's downhill all the way. You're hitting it just running behind a double team, running behind the tight end, which will also be better this year. Daniel Young does that well.
Mm-hmm.
He's not super explosive, but he hits the cutback hard. He drags people. He can get that 3 to 5 yards that you expect that play to get consistently in every situation. I think Trey Watson is maybe a little more explosive. He's experienced with that play. I think they expect him to probably mostly be a change of pace guy and a guy that just adds depth to make sure that they don't go over a cliff. Carter has a lot of upside in this offense, but as everyone has seen, he fumbles. I think they would love for him to be able to win the job, and they can't trust him. And then after that, you have Kyle Porter, who's
He tries.
Solid. He's solid in there. He's, you know, he's not going to do more than the play blocks for, and the play didn't block for very much last year, so that's what you got. Chris Warren was not a great fit for this, and they should be better overall than they were last year, but I don't know if they have that difference maker unless Ingram is ready to come in and light the world on fire.
Do you foresee Ingram being good at that primary run play that you just described for us?
Oh, and Carthage was all about it.
They were. Okay,
so
that's great.
He's no stranger to the, you know, read and cut, and he also has both the power and the willingness to run between the tackles and also the ability to get outside if people lose contain. He's ideal for this system. It's just a matter of when will his weight and his experience in the college game versus 4A high school football allow him to be a feature back.
Ian, we've asked Justin this question before on the show, so I want to get your take on it. Look, the running back position, I mean, 2 years ago you had Deontay Foreman, who went to the Doak Walker Award, rushes for 2,000 yards. There's no debate who the main running back was, and that dude was getting the ball early and often. Last year, I mean, the leading rusher on this team was the backup quarterback in Sam Ehlinger. Does this team need... No one's going to have a Deontay Foreman like here on this offense, but does this team need one running back to step up and take control over this job like Deontay did 2 years ago, or can they be successful as a rushing unit in sort of a back-by-committee style format?
I think by-committee will be okay, partly because Sam Ehlinger is basically a running back in the system at times, and particularly in short yardage. If you look back at Ohio State when Tom Herman had JT Barrett, he would run inside zone for JT Barrett when they had to pick up third and three or whatever, and it was automatic because you use the quarterback, you motion the running back out wide, you get an extra man. You just have to have a quarterback that knows how to run the play and will run through people to pull it off. Obviously, Ehlinger is that. They used him in that way some last year, and I think they're gonna do it a lot. So Texas fans better buckle up and be ready to watch that guy get hit more.
Oh boy, that bodes well because Sam Ehlinger is a good physical runner, but it also seems like that's going to lead to more injuries as well. I don't know. We'll find out about that one. But then again, that's why they have made every effort possible to keep Shane Buechele in the fold, because if this offensive line is playing better, if they're able to establish that running game, Buechele's going to look like a different quarterback if he can go off of play action a little bit more, right?
Yeah. I mean, but they would run Buechele last year when he was – per
That's
Herman just
too.
Now the only scholarship quarterback that was ready to go. So this
is
just
too.
This is just how he does it. He runs the quarterback. Herman has done the math in his head. He knows that's a way to win, and he's going to do it.
Now, I wanted to ask about the wide receiver group also, because for me, and I think BK to a degree, it seems obvious that at times, if Texas lines up with three or four wide, they need to have LJ Humphrey and also Colin Johnson on the same side of the field at the same time, because if you're going to double Colin Johnson, that leaves somebody lesser to defend somebody who's maybe as if not more explosive than LJ Humphrey. Is that feasible in this offense to have LJ Humphrey playing the slot with Colin Johnson on the same side?
I don't know how often they're going to put him on the same side. That's probably something they'll mix in as like a third and long overload type strategy. Overall, though, also, I mean, LGH is basically going to be like a flex tight end in the offense this year.
Okay.
Where it's going to be, are they going to send a safety down to double LGH, throw it outside to Colin? Are they going to leave the safety, both safeties back to get help over on Colin Johnson? Well, now you got LGH on a linebacker or a nickel, and they're either too slow or too small. It should be a really lethal pairing, even if they're not on the same side.
Okay.
Justin, your thoughts on the weapons. Obviously, if the offensive line doesn't give whoever wins the quarterback job time to throw the football, it's not going to matter. But I think it's a relatively deep and experienced group at wide receiver. We know Colin Johnson and LJ Humphrey have the ability to be breakout players in 2018. And also the tight end spot. And we touched on this a couple of weeks ago. I mean, you've got some experience. You actually have some depth there for the first time in a while. What's your take on all the weapons that whoever wins this quarterback battle is going to have this year?
Well, I'll first say, you know, having Ehlinger for a second year is the biggest thing, because the game's going to slow down for him. So he's going to – those weapons were there last year. It's just a lot of times, you know, the play would break down or he wouldn't have protection, so he had to kind of ad-lib. This year, he's going to be more comfortable. And last year with the injury to Andrew Beck during fall camp was detrimental, because that guy, there's a lot of what, you know, in 12 personnel that Herman loves to run, there's a lot of the tight end usage. You know, there's going to be a lot of times where he's on one side and Cade Brewer, Malcolm Epps, Reese Littell, you know, somebody like that's going to be on the other side. And so you're automatically upgraded there with two quality tight ends. That depth and that tight end room has jumped and doubled in the last 12 months, and that's tremendous. At receiver, you really want to see Colin Johnson break out. I mean, if you've seen the guy in practice and if you've seen him do the combine-style things, Colin is a freak. He's 6'6". He can do backflips and catch a football. He leaps. He jumps. He's got incredible flexibility. But we haven't seen it translate fully on the field. We've seen glimpses. We've seen West Virginia 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. We saw USC last year when he abused all-conference Jack Jones. We need to see consistency out of Colin Johnson to really utilize those weapons. Little Jordan Humphrey is probably the best – I'm going to say probably the best – offensive weapon in the program. He's that versatile to where he can run some of the ball, he can play in the slot, he can play some Z, and at the same time, he can also play quarterback. I mean, he threw in last year against Tech, he had a quarterback pass to Sam Ellinger that really started off that drive as well. And so, guys that haven't really been mentioned that I think people need to pay attention to is Devin Duvernay. They've put a lot of focus on that guy in the spring, and him and Ellinger and Bouchel have really kind of made him a priority to make sure, because he's got elite speed and body control. He's like a mini Quan Cosby. The guy is the total package. He just has to find his fit in his role, and I think they found that this spring. There was a lot of practices that we got to see that you saw Devin Duvernay get this guy beat or go on a wheel route like he did his freshman year where he was unguardable. And so guys like Devin Duvernay, Gerard Hurd, and even a Davion Curtis, Once Ellinger gets comfortable in his skin and he gets the game starts to slow down for him, Colin Johnson has a breakout, Humphrey gets utilized in each spot, Duvernay kind of starts to come into his own, then you're going to see the offense start having fun. And if you just – the offense just has to be good, because we know what Todd Orlando's going to do on defense. And we know, you know, Tom Herman said a while ago they were missing 8 guys on the defensive side of the ball, and they shut down one of the best offenses in the country in Missouri in the Texas Bowl. Mm-hmm. Just fill in the blanks with those guys, with the returners. And so just as long as the offense is good and that defense keeps – par for the course, I think that's where you're going to see actually the utilization of those guys.
Guys, before we get to the defensive side of the ball, I did want to ask about one guy on the offense who is now a member of the offense, who came in as a member of the defense. That's DeShawn Jamison. He is now considered a wide receiver, apparently. Do you think that this leads to him actually getting a little bit more playing time than he would have in 2018 otherwise? Start with you, Ian.
Well, I think they are rightfully worried about what kind of year Lil Jordan might have. Humphrey might have this season, and needing depth behind him, both if he moved on to the NFL after this year, or anyways, just if he was injured or something. There's not a lot behind him right now, and there's a lot of opportunity for the next slot to play that playmaking position that gets a lot of touches, and so they need talent there. They need athletes there, and Jamison is that.
Absolutely. Jamison is, and Herman even mentioned just a while ago, he's going to be playing both. They've got him working at both spots. They've got him working at the slot. They've got him working on some nickel. But they saw a need at the slot because Jamison brings elite dynamicism. He is dynamite. This guy, and especially in the kick return and punt return game. But when you've got guys that, with his speed, he's one of the second or third fastest players in the program already.
Wow.
He's already up to 190 pounds. He looked tremendous when I saw him coaching at the Prime 21 camp on Saturday at Arlington Martin. This guy is, you just see him, and you see him with the ball in his hands, and that's the type of elite athletes that you see Alabamas and the Georgias and the Clemsons. They have those little guys that are versatile, but also add that plus athlete recipe to it. And so right now I think his biggest impact is going to be on kick return and punt return, but you have to throw him over there on the offense simply because he's going to be hard to catch. If you've watched any of his senior tape, I mean, it's a highlight reel that, ravels Sam McGuffey and Noel Devine. I mean, the kid is electric, and that's what Texas coaches are paid to do, put the right guys in the right spots to make the right plays.
Yep. Just a couple more for you guys. Just curious, you guys were here for Tom Herman's press conference, state of Texas football, if you will, here at Big 12 Media Days. And anything, we'll start with you, Ian, anything stick out? Something that really grabbed your attention, maybe surprised you a little bit from what Tom Herman had to say this morning?
Not really, but you can tell he's savvy just with, he spent time talking about their weight gains, their strength gains. He just turned his section of the presser into an advertisement for the Tom Herman Texas football
program. He had the longest introductory statement of any coach by far.
It was smart because he knows that they only have 15 minutes, so he knows that he can gerrymander a little bit, right?
We saw this with a couple years back when, was it Grobe took over for Baylor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Grobe.
And everybody was like, oh, what's going to happen here in this presser? And he gets up and he turns every question into an opportunity to just tell stories about his time in football and the things he's seen in football and just droning on and eating up time. And
aw, shucks.
It's clever. It's clever. That's why we call him Mensa Tom.
That's right.
Jay Wells, anything for you?
The first thing that stood out to me was the fact that I think Tom Herman refuses to refer to specialists by their name. You know, the first question was about how do you replace, you know, the punter Michael Dixon, the All-American, who's with the Seattle Seahawks right now, you know, one of the best punters probably college football has ever seen. Well, you sign his cousin. And so and more that he had talked about it, he's like, you know, that punter is going to be pretty good. So it looks like, you know, Herman has a thing against, you know, mentioning their names. And that's kind of funny, and it's all in good. I mean, I think if you'd ask Dixon off the air, he'd probably tell you it'd be okay to mention his name. But that's something that stood out. It seems like Herman has fun with that. You know, he enjoys that. He's 100% guy in everything, and the players will tell you that, and the guys that work with him will tell you that. David Beatty, talked to him yesterday, the Kansas coach, and he said, you know, Herman is an all-or-nothing guy. You get 100% of him. And so just from this morning, just seeing him, he looks a little more comfortable. This is his second year. And, you know, it's not the newness is gone. And of course, referring to his new punter as the punter. I guess it could be the punter to the sequel. But the funniest thing was he basically filibustered the first 10 minutes of it. And that's just because Tom is two steps ahead of a lot of people. And like Ian said, they call him Mensa Tom for a reason. And so it's going to be really fun here in the next few hours to get in front of him in the podium and really get him on some questions on some scheme fits, some freshman fits, and what he expects out of this team in 2018.
Mm-hmm. Last thing for me, guys. I just wanted to ask one question on defense. And I'll start with you, Ian, because you have the technical savvy. It seems for me, as somebody who has watched this Longhorn football team for my entire life, seeing what they were able to do on defense last year, that there may be a little bit of a struggle for this defense in terms of stopping the run between the tackles because of some of the talent that they lost. Puna Ford, Malik Jefferson, also Deshaun Elliott. Do you foresee that as potentially being an issue for this Texas defense?
It's really hard to tell, honestly. Orlando has always made his reputation by stopping the run and then bringing crazy blitzes that destroy protections on third down. Stopping the run in the Big 12 is just a different ball game than in other leagues because it's so attached to the pass game. Early on in the year, it seemed like they were struggling a little bit with that. It's hard to know how much of that was new guys in a new scheme with bad habits versus schematic issues. I think that they will make sure that they commit what they need to commit to stop the run if it's an issue this year. Last year, they ended up going into a more of a we're going to stop the pass and then let Malik and Puna clean up anything else. That showed a good awareness of what the defending the Big 12 is about, and it also showed a good awareness of playing to their strengths, their personnel.
So
there's good reason to be optimistic that they will figure out a formula that is effective.
Okay, how about you, Justin?
Well, you have some coaches, and I've had a handful of college coaches tell me this. You have some coaches that are stuck with their system. And whatever the players are, this is the system we're going to run. They're almost stubborn to a fault. Todd Orlando is the polar opposite. He's on the other side of the spectrum. He's going to fit the players to the scheme. And that's exactly kind of what Ewan said a lot better than I would. It, you know, Orlando is whatever it's going to take, he's going to fit. He's going to move and match. He's going to move people around. He's going to, you know, Brecken Hager's a great example. You know, they're going to have his hand on the ground a lot of the time now. They're going to utilize him in the best possible way. Chris Nelson coming back is huge. And we got to talk about Taquan Graham. This is a guy that's the best 285 I've ever seen looking. A sophomore out of Temple. He's going to be a good contributor, a guy that, you know, you want fresh bodies coming in off that D-line, especially when you're trying to stop the run. And so I think Taquan Graham is a guy to really look at, a court from the D-line and stopping the run. But mainly it's Todd Orlando's ability to improv and to fit those players to the scheme and to make sure, you know, he's not stubborn. Make sure, you know, Gary Johnson's the gap shooter and make sure that Anthony Wheeler plays the Mac, you know, the mic the way it should and you know, the utilization of Rover and things of that sort. And so if you believe in Todd Orlando and what he did last year, which is, you know, his reputation stands for itself, I really do think that's exactly what you should expect.
Guys, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. Inside Texas is where you can read their great work. You can also hear Justin Wells on this show every Wednesday at noon. We're still going to do that tomorrow, right?
Well, yes, sir.
Okay.
That's highlight of my week, man. I'm just making sure we can't have that canceled.
That's what I was hoping.
Come on.
And, guys, thank you so much for the time. Ian Boyd, Justin Wells.
Go get some
really
food,
appreciate
man.
It. Go get some food
they just
now.
Put the buffet out. Buffet it's time to eat, boys. Great stuff.
Nothing but love, gentlemen.
Likewise. All right, we will take a break. We got to get Wags involved from back in Austin.
Yes,
we will postpone Tinder. the next segment. We got to talk about the Home Run Derby, man. Some high drama at the Derby last night in our nation's capital. Plus, Wags will give us whatever's on his mind on a Tuesday edition. Midday, Trey and BK live from Frisco, Texas at Big 12 Media Days. This is The Horn.
Here on the Midday Show, thanks again to Justin Wells and Ian Boyd for joining the program. We are live from Big 12 Media Days in Frisco. We're at the Star, a.k.a. Little Jerry World, and this whole setup is impressive, BK. Not just the stadium, but also everything going on around here. I got lunch just outside the stadium yesterday.
Yeah, you had free food right here. Media buffet.
I'm not a
put on by Jerry Jones.
I'm not
so you
a
know
buffet
it's gonna
guy.
Be good. It's not like it's at the Pafield down in Austin. It's like a high school buffet, although they usually like hook it up with Zaxby's or Golden Chick or something, so I shouldn't rip those too bad. But you got legit Jerry Jones media buffet here. I mean, that's like a known thing. Our man Stu can attest to that.
Dude,
Jerry Jones goes all out for the media.
That's half the reason I go cover the Cowboys home games.
for the meal.
I mean, when you can get prime rib for a media meal, it's not bad.
I'm not a buffet guy, guys.
What do you mean you're not a buffet? How are you not a buffet guy?
They have a carving station in the press box.
Who's not a buffet guy?
I for one,
that's as American as it gets, is the buffet.
I'm somebody
you're not American
who likes to get out and support local when I'm in the community. It's why I have to mock you when you tell me that you come to Dallas and you're eating.
They got local buffets like Buffet King on 35,
Taco Bell,
CC's Pizza.
That's why I had to go to East Hampton Sandwich Company yesterday for the one meal I ate yesterday because my stomach's still a little bit wonky because I ate so poorly in Chicago last week. Drink up.
Oh, did you eat a couple of pieces of meat? You didn't have kale at every meal up in Chicago, so now you're hurting.
I already told you, Meat Fest set a really bad
meat
tone.
Meat Fest 2018.
It was so much meat and so little vegetables, and that just kind of screwed my system up all week.
That kind of describes Big 12 Media Days. A lot of meat going on.
That reminds
here.
I got to get That's with true. You about Chicago spots because Sports Guys Talking Wrestling said in Chicago,
nice
week one of college football season, huge event there put on for those who know wrestling. Cody Rhodes,
okay.
And the Young Bucks, All In. Sports Guys Talking Wrestling, part of All In. We're going to be in Chicago, so
okay.
I got to get with you on where to go eat.
I'll give you some suggestions.
Right.
We've got the cost-effective list and also the break-your-budget list,
all
too.
Right.
So you let me know which of those
okay.
you want, and I'll be happy
Don't
to get
them down
this road.
Probably a little
of each, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I might be going up there in a couple of weeks, too. I got to figure out when I'm leaving. I got to take a vacation at some point. All right. That's the voice of Stu Myrick. Now we got to toss it back to the mothership in Austin, Texas.
Hold on just a second. There's an outside chance that we're about to talk to Tom Herman for a few minutes, so we may have to push Tinder Time back even one more segment, too.
We're screwing Wags,
dude,
man.
Just kill it and let Stu talk about sports wrestling.
It's not intentional, I promise, but I just
hey, come on.
John
you brought Hayden. Up Canseco, all right?
Oh, man. All right. A little home run derby then talk. We'll wait for Wags. We'll do Tinder Time at some point. We don't want to screw up our chance to talk to Tom Herman. But home run derby last night. Actually, very entertaining. You know, last week on Thursday, I hosted the solo show while you were out
yeah.
of town. And my goal was to try to find a way to make the All-Star Week in Major League Baseball fun
okay.
and entertaining. TV ratings have gone so far downhill
yep.
for the MLB All-Star Game. I mean, last year and 2 years ago were like overnight ratings of 5.4.
Well, it no longer means anything, BK.
Right. Well, it no longer means anything. But in the 60s and 70s, when the All-Star Game was just getting started, TV ratings were in the 20s. Like, people really enjoyed the Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
Was it that, or was it they didn't have a whole lot of other good options to watch on that Tuesday night?
Well, what other options do you have right now to watch? I mean, I guess you have TV shows, but if you're a sports fan, that's the only sport that's going on right now.
You got Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon out the wazoo, man.
I don't know. But I talked about trying to find a way to make the Home Run Derby great. I like the one-on-one timer format that
they
incorporated last night. I said something like a distance tracker. You know, StatCast nowadays, in the blink of an eye, you could see how far a home run was hit.
And that helped Kyle Schwarber beat Alex Bregman in the first round.
With the bonus. But I would love, like, first to 5,000 feet.
Oh,
on home runs or something like that.
I like that idea.
Where they're both maybe going at the same time.
I like that idea a lot.
But also, you know, pitching challenges, right? Who can throw the fastest? An accuracy competition. Fastest around the bases. all type of stuff that I think Major League Baseball could do to improve their All-Star Week. But the Home Run Derby last night, very entertaining. You had the hometown hero, Bryce Harper, getting it done in the final round, hit 9 home runs in like 47 seconds to come from behind to beat Kyle Schwarber.
Hometown hero for about 3 more months.
You had the current Cub losing to the future Cub was yeah. a joke I saw on the internet. And, of course, Cubs fans who are just, you know, despite winning the World Series 2 years ago, they're still just the most depressed fan base out there. And they still
don't they have the best record in the NL right
dude,
now?
Dude, it's unbelievable how they work. I mean, if you look at Twitter, I follow Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN up there. And it's like every time the Cubs lose, the sky is falling. Season's over. Trade this guy. Fire Joe Maddon. It's like, oh, you're 16 games over 500. I think you're all right. So, of course, you had Cubs fans after Kyle Schwarber lost, and they're complaining about the rules. Because you were supposed to technically wait until the previous ball landed before the next pitch was thrown, and that wasn't happening, apparently, when Bryce Harper was up for his final round. So Cubs fans were losing their mind over that.
Imagine working for WGN Radio during one of the worst stretches in Chicago Cubs history. That's what I was dealing with caller-wise at that time. And we're going to shift away from the baseball conversation back to more football live from Big 12 Media Days because we're joined now at the table by Tom Herman. Tom, thank you so much for the time. I'm Trey Elling. That's Brad Kellner. Really appreciate the time today, Coach. How you doing?
You guys are really talking baseball during the Big 12 football media days, huh?
It was a slight lull in the football conversation. He decided to bring up the home run derby.
I'm not happy about it, Coach.
He thought there were some good ideas, but I'm trying to tell him, Coach, there's just too much else on right now to watch a game that no longer matters. It's a glorified exhibition when you have things like Hulu, Amazon, Netflix as well, that you have all these great programs to choose from, unlike the 60s and 70s where people were tuning into the All-Star game in drones because that was the only thing on, you know?
When you had... three channels, I guess, and maybe your local affiliate or whatever.
Exactly.
That hopefully is the only time you're asked about the MLB All-Star game.
I hope so.
True.
I want to get to one of the things that you opened with up there on stage, the two-step plan for you guys this offseason, or the two words that you're promoting to your team, develop and finish. If you could elaborate on that, just kind of what that means and what you're trying to get your guys to change and improve on as they go into the 2018 season.
Well, it's not just the players; it's coaches too. We need to develop. We need to get better. We need to constantly improve. I need to improve. I need to develop. And one of the develop part was really two pronged. One, we needed to develop as athletes. We had to get bigger. You know, we've only been in our off season program. Some of these guys that were freshmen, that played for us, the Taquan Grahams, the Marquez Bimage, the Derek Kirst that are starting right tackle, had been in a college offseason program for 2 months, June and July, and then boom, hey, go start against Oronquo from Oklahoma, you know, and it's like, what? You know, I'm not even shaving, you know, and it's so we needed to develop in the weight room, we needed to develop on the field, we needed to develop as football players, but then the second prong to that was we needed to develop relationships. We were, in my opinion, a bit of a splintered locker room that had different cliques and factions, if you will. And so we needed to develop relationships, and not only player to player, but player to coach. And then the finish part is obvious, right? I mean, we had the lead in 4 of our 6 losses in the fourth quarter or overtime, and we let them slip away for various reasons. And so but part of that is the development, part of that is those young guys offensively, you know, starting 5 true freshmen and a true sophomore, you know, that's certainly not a recipe for lighting scoreboards on fire, but the best thing about true freshmen is they become sophomores, and we're able to have them for a year now and to develop them into this. Is a lot of people forget too, now this is the first time in 5 years that we've had the same offensive system for 2 years in a row.
Yes, sir.
I mean, that is crazy to me to think about. Those poor kids on offense that have had the offensive system changed year after year after year. And so just the consistency of that should help us finish. And then we've got to learn how to embrace the enormity of the moment. Embrace, hey, this is not a here we go again deal. You know, and that's where the effect of 3 straight losing seasons can affect the confidence level and the psyche of a 18 to 22-year-old young man, where we don't quite know what to do when we do have the lead in the fourth quarter. We don't know, we don't have that confidence, and that's on us as coaches to develop that, and that's what we spent most of the offseason doing.
Coach, it seems like the players are much more relaxed this year. It seems like you're a little bit more relaxed as well. Is that the case for you heading into year two with Texas football?
I'm excited to coach the team. I know that. I was excited last year, don't get me wrong, but I don't know that I've ever been this excited to coach a team because of the progress that I feel like we've made this offseason, not just X's and O's, not just in the weight room, but just in the relationship aspect of everything. And so does that translate into me being more relaxed? I don't know. I'd like to think I'm a pretty laid-back dude when I'm not on the field. But I really like this team, and I'm excited to coach them.
Final thing, Coach, what will you consider to be a successful season in 2018?
If we develop, right, if we can stay – together, if we can stay cohesive, we're going to be thrust with adversity. We're going to be hit in the mouth at some point, and how we respond to that is going to tell us a lot about how we have developed from a relationship aspect. And then can we finish? Can we finish and turn those close losses into some wins this year and hopefully be in the discussion for the Big 12 championship in the month of November.
Coach, we know you're a wanted man, so we'll let you go, but we appreciate you stopping by for a few minutes. Best of luck the rest of this week and in the 2018 season. We appreciate your time.
All right, thanks, guys. Hook 'em horns.
Yes, sir.
Thank you,
Tom.
He goes,
Coach Tom Herman, head coach of the Texas football program, and great stuff right there. All right, we got to take a break. We're up against it. We'll get some reaction to what Coach Herman had to say. We will get some Tinder time at some point. We can't leave Wags out to dry, but some great conversation from Big 12 Media Days up at the Star in Frisco. Many thanks once again to AV Consultations and Lone Oak Motors for getting us up here. We appreciate them. You're listening to the Midday Show right here on the Horn.